Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Tom Watt and I've just watched the last ever episode of Succession.
I've not yet, so no spoilers please. I'll be watching that after record.
So. The bit with the cat. There's no bit with the cat.
Well, no, that's a spoiler. It could have been.
Or is it?
It could have been.
Well, you don't know. Oh. Now we're playing proper 4D Logan Roy chess as to what to expect or not. But you are hearing the dulcet tones of Mr. Ewan Taylor. Hello, Ewan.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Good. Glad all this is over.
Yes.
Season is done and dusted. We're going to be talking about the final set of league games from the 2022-23 season when there were precisely no changes in league positions between the clubs, I think. There's probably even less fight from Ross County, and Hearts sealed European football by giving Hibs a hell of a drawing. Yes. How is it for you?
When you see some of the other sort of dramatic results, I suppose. I mean, there hasn't been that many across the European leagues, but there's been a few. You see our league, and it's like, I mean, this very podcast is just like fulfilling a fixture that we have to fulfill. You know, one of us is like an aging guy that we're trying, you know, that maybe is trying to get in the shop window for a move in the summer. The other one's like a youngster that's, you know, trying to impress. You can make up your mind who's who.
I was going to say you can feel free to make up your mind as to which one's which.
But yeah, we're here anyway, and we have to. You know, we're contractually obliged to talk about the last round of games, even though there's not that much to say about them.
There is few phrases in the English language that get anyone going quite like contractual obligations. We'll try and obviously the matches were split between Saturday and Sunday. I think in the interests of people's sanity and actually talking about games that matter, we'll maybe split this up a bit so we don't either front load or back load the three games that really didn't matter whatsoever. Because we've given it some thought for your attention spans and how much you would enjoy it, unlike Sky Sports schedulers this weekend.
Indeed.
Ooh, zing. we'll start, I think, with the Edinburgh Derby. It was one of the two games that had serious jeopardy on the line. Hibs won, they would have leapfrogged Hearts and confirmed their place in European football next season. They would have finished fourth. And it, you know, Hearts had, were obviously trying to stop the rot after a difficult few weeks. It looked, anyway, for the first, Hearts go 1-0 up, and it looks very much like, oh, this is, this, they're flexing a little. They're sending out a statement. But it was not to be like quite so comfortable as that.
No, it wasn't. An odd game, which, yeah, as Hearts, obviously, as you see, started well. That's probably the first I know he's been getting a bit of hype in recent weeks, but I've not really been convinced. But that Oda's finish, that is a good start for him. And I think he probably needed something to sort of hang his hat on for going into next season. That, you know, is he going to be a starter for Hearts? I think probably they should be looking to improve on their forward options. But you know, he has certainly sort of turned a bit of a corner recently, and you know, that's a big moment for him. And it was a really good finish. After that, Hearts obviously, you know, the game, I suppose, changes quite significantly on the red card, which is a red card. And after that, it's one of those where you obviously, like, you think, would you rather have the penalty or the sending off? And then you sort of get both because the free kick goes straight in. A really good free kick, and it was just like a nice finish. It was just like, it wasn't almost like a free kick. It was just, you know, into the side net, and almost like you almost took it like a penalty.
It was almost one of those ones, though, that reminds me of like when you're in P7 and there's the boy that can hit it really hard.
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't really want to stand on the wall, so we'll just hope that the goalie's got this covered because he's going to hit it really hard.
Yes. It seemed, it doesn't feel like you should be able to score a free kick like that. So I think something had gone wrong. Obviously, Clark took a sort of step the other side, just as it was getting hit. So, but it did seem a wee bit too easy to score a free kick, albeit it was a really good finish. And then after that, I mean, you know, fair enough, you know, the way the first half ended, and that, you know, Hibs were sort of all over Hearts in terms of pressure, and there's quite a few corners, and there was wee sort of, you know, there were good chances in amongst that, but nothing, you know, nothing coming from open play. But then I sort of felt that Hibs, I don't know if bottling's the right word for it, but they just got themselves a bit too excited, I thought. And absolutely management, included within that, as you saw afterwards, or so sure we'll come on to. But it's just like the subs that they made, it's almost like instead of just trying to see the game out by playing properly and thinking, right, we've got 45 minutes here to score, Hearts, you're down to 10 men, Hearts will tire, just keep on playing, sort of playing properly. It was almost like, you know, they panicked. Obviously, they brought on Harry McCurdy at half time for Jago. Now, I don't think there was an injury there, so far as I'm aware. And it might seem like the right thing to do, you know, take off a defensive midfielder for a forward, but when the forward is Harry McCurdy, is that a good idea?
Recently pictured with like in fancy dress on top banter, Harry. You're like, you know, you can get away with that if you've had a good season. If you're just
fuck off, Harry. That wound me up. I felt like I was like instantly became like sort of Hibs da. Watch it, like just seeing that picture. I was like, you've not justified that, Harold. But so you bring him on, and you know, he gets a few shots off, but you know, obviously, you know, hasn't really looked like scoring his whole time at Hibs. And you know, there's various other subs, you know, made pretty early. You know, Campbell comes on after 52 minutes. Cabrera comes on after 56.
Five substitutes before the 68th minute.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, are you really? You know, Henderson also came on at halftime for right back, and you're like, well, that just feels like it's almost like it felt a wee bit to me, watching Hibs has often felt like this season, that Lee Johnson wanted to change something so that it was Lee Johnson that finished fourth, not necessarily Hibs. And you know, that might seem unfair, but I think, you know, Lee Johnson is quite an easy guy to be unfair to, and he
so we're not going to stop.
Exactly. And it just felt like, what's the need? Because like Hibs were in complete control at the end of that end of the first half. Why go sort of panic stations and almost straight away? And then, you know, obviously summed up in the end by bringing on Mikey Devlin as a striker in the 91st minute. I mean, come on.
It's an interesting one. It's not
probably
going to
be his only appearance for Hibs, I imagine.
Wouldn't massively surprise me. I mean, to be fair to Mikey Devlin, he did technically complete a match, which is pretty good going for Mikey Devlin, given the last couple of years he's had. So, you know, congratulations on that. But I think it was a classic case of, like, there's nothing that, like, infuriates me more than watching a manager just think that if I throw more attacking players on, then I'm more likely to score. Like, you've got all of the ball. Like Hibs had all of the ball. They had all of the pressure. They had, they were getting chances. They were getting chances from set pieces, and it was the Hearts were decent defensively, but hardly like they never had to get into like a backs to the wall, last ditch throwing bodies on the line. Mm-hmm. All Hibs needed to do was keep doing what they're doing until such a point where they're like, no, like fresh legs now would be good. The system wasn't wrong. The players on the pitch that they had weren't wrong. So just starting to change things, like you say, for the sake of changing things. And when you were making, like anyone who's ever watched a preseason friendly knows that if you make five substitutions, your whole game plan goes to pot, and there's never any fluidity from it.
Obviously there was an enforced one with Cadden, but that was almost to an extent that's unlucky. But you are likely, you know, in a game like that, and especially being the last game of the season, I mean, it's not unheard of that you pick up an injury, and because they'd already brought off Miller, it was like, well, now you don't have a natural sort of right sided defender slash your fullback slash winger to bring on, because you've already taken off Miller, who's maybe not that adept attacking wise, but you'd obviously taken him off thinking Cadden could be the whole right hand side himself, which he probably could have been, but then he gets injured and you've got nobody else. So just he's just got a wee bit too excited, and then obviously scenes we all love to see at the end when I mean, he will get like, you'll get dubbed for that, I think.
Yes.
Really? I mean, he threw a bunch at Naismith. So, which I'm sure a lot of people in Scottish football have wanted to do down the years, but you can't really do that. I don't know where it leaves Naismith now. I mean, it was sort of like his whole spell could probably just be a bit of a meh. Is that enough to get the job long term? I'm not sure.
I mean, I am not a Hearts fan, and I am kind of delighted that he came in fourth and finished fourth. But I think if I was a Hearts fan, I would be looking for a bit better than would be looking at what some of the options are. I think there's not enough evidence that he fixed the problems that were there, other than the fact they stopped losing games at the same rate that they've been losing. But they, you know, regularly when a manager gets fired, it's like there's a bigger problem. So just getting rid of you know, I reckon half the time, if you got rid of the manager and just put in the most vanilla person in the world to just be there and do exactly what they'd done in the previous game, they would play better because they just hated the last guy, or they, you know, there was a toxic atmosphere, or he was associated with defeat or whatever. So they've all got a sense of professional pride that'll kick in. So I'm not convinced that had that vanilla man existed, he would have done a fairly similar job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, as we're on our Patreon episode, we'll be, as a sneak peek, we'll be reviewing all the managerial changes of the season, and you know which ones worked and which ones didn't. But it did feel, as a general rule, the approach Scottish football took this season was like, just, you know, basically, he knows the players' names and he'll do as an appointment. And that has had, you know, wildly different results. You know, sometimes it's worked an absolute treat, other times has been an unmitigated disaster. So Naismith's probably somewhere in the middle of that, in that, you know, things didn't get worse, but things didn't get much better, and it sort of felt just like a little bit of resorting to the mean, I felt. So I think the Hearts probably need to move on from Naismith. And Naismith, he's done okay, and he's obviously as ready to be a manager as he's going to be, but I don't think that means he should go into one of the sort of top five jobs in the country necessarily.
There, you would guess from experience, there will be other opportunities for him in the next 6 months.
Yes. So he just needs to get himself in somewhere as like head of youth somewhere, and then he'll be manager within 2 months. So
just learn all the names at someone exactly. And then they're there. A match that did mean something to a couple of matches that didn't really mean anything at all. Rangers 3, St Mirren 0. Anything to say?
It was okay for a Rangers perspective. Sakala did his sort of thing that he does, and he sort of scores goals while still being quite annoying to watch. Peter Minsky is not the answer for St Mirren. He seemed to have a fairly significant hole in him for the second goal. Rangers had three shots on target, scored three goals. So no saves from Mr. Minsky. So yeah, not sure about him being an option for St Mirren going forward if they were thinking about that. But yeah, right, I mean, it was just, this was very much the definition of fulfilling a fixture, and it was, yeah, I don't think anyone learned anything. You know, I sort of suspect if St Mirren had something on the line, you know, they might have got something, because I don't think Rangers just didn't seem that up for it. But, and you know, given that it was basically a bit of a friendly for St Mirren as well, you know, Rangers are superior quality, they told in the end.
John Souter seems like he's...
Yes, yes, it was good that he had a good game against St Mirren in particular, given the death threats that I received for having him in the top 12 centre half list, specifically from St Mirren fans who were raging that none of their chancers were included in that list. But yeah, I think it was Souter was always going to be a good player for Rangers once he played. And when he plays, it's just how often he's actually going to do that. And you know, he's had a decent run of games now. He sort of looked better with everyone. He's obviously in the Scotland squad now, which is good to see. And you know, we just sadly we probably await his next long term injury. But for now, you know, he's been really good. And you know, there's a bit of question whether Conor Goldson's going to be fit for the start of next season. So that, you know, there will be, I imagine Rangers will sign centre halves, but I suspect at the moment if Souter stays fit, he'll probably start, you know, the Champions League qualifiers. There will be, so that'll be a different level for him. But yeah, at the moment he's certainly, you know, looking good, and you know, if you could stay injury free and you know, have a proper pre-season, which he's probably not had in, you know, I don't know how many years he's not really had a proper preseason, so it'd be great if he could do that. And then, you know, he is a really, really good footballer. I mean, he's arguably, you know, he could move on from Rangers to a level above that, I think, if he could stay fit. But it's that doesn't, you know, the history would tell us that's unlikely. But yeah, no, he's looked really, really good in the last few weeks.
Anything further? We did promise you contractual obligations. I mean, there is not an awful lot to
obviously a good season for St Mirren, you would say. A bit disappointing in the top six fixtures, but albeit, you know, they did get got a result at Parkhead, which not many have done. But yeah, probably, I mean, I think they're just sort of, they are probably the sixth best team in the league, and that's where they finished. And you know, that's I think that might be the high water mark for them, and I would expect them to probably go a wee bit backwards next season. But the, you know, I imagine that they've got enough players sort of tied up for next season that, you know, they shouldn't fall through the floor. But good season, and we'll see how they get on next season.
Well organized, and I think there was some chat that St Mirren could have broken into the top six last season and they blew it, and then maybe they could go, and there was a few nervous moments, but they have been very well organised there, especially in Paisley, are an absolute pain in the arse to play against. Usually, not so much on this game, but there's enough players under contract. I mean, you'd imagine that, like, you've probably seen the last of like Kenner Backus, definitely like seen the last of Curtis Main, who's heading back down south.
Ryan Strain maybe,
yeah, yes. But like you say, there's enough players under contract, especially when we get to some of the other clubs who seem to have about six players contracted for next season. That
you would think they would
something to build on.
Be fine. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Searching for the perfect gift idea for that hard-to-buy person on your list? The Allbirds Wool Runner is a natural fit. The Wool Runner is super cozy, super comfy, and super giftable. It's made with ZQ-certified merino wool, a naturally cozy material that offers next-level comfort and a lower environmental impact. The cushioned midsole and versatile design offer all-day comfort in a classic style you can wear every day, even in a winter wonderland. And its fully machine-washable construction makes it easy to keep your shoes looking like new. Allbirds shows off the Wool Runner's carbon footprint right on the shoe so you can see the difference for yourself. On top of that, they actually offset that carbon footprint to zero, making the Wool Runner completely carbon neutral, so you can stay cozy and tread lighter on the planet. This holiday season, give tidings for comfort and coziness with the Allbirds Wool Runner. Discover your perfect pair at allbirds.com. That's allbirds.com.
We'll get this one out of the way. Celtic 6, Aberdeen 0. 5. Sorry, it was only 5.
Could have been 2-6.
It could. I mean, I watched until 2-0 and then it was...
Yes.
It was a Celtic team that were kind of on it and were pretty much at full strength. And an Aberdeen team that just couldn't... After the first one went in especially, we were like, there's nothing. There's nothing here. With the exception of maybe like Johnny Hayes ran. But I think there was, there was nothing really to pick up on. I think Celtic were really good. Aberdeen had no shots on goal and no. And there were a couple of runs in behind in the first half, but nothing really of any kind of note at any point. It was like the, you know, it was kind of a bit of a procession. I really did want to find something to talk about in this one, but it was like,
it was
vaguely competitive for the first 20 minutes, and it was quite interesting seeing a slightly deeper midfield three from Aberdeen, but you know, I'm really clutching at straws when the first goal went. You know, Celtic had a chance pretty much straight from kickoff, and they weren't even taking kickoff, and it did feel a bit like, it's just as well we've got the business done a couple of weeks during midweek, because it, you know, we would. It may have been a slightly more application involved, but I think there's a reminder that there is still a work in progress from Aberdeen, and that Celtic are still a very, very good team when they bother their arses.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't draw massive conclusions out of it, given what was on the line, but as in there wasn't anything. But I do think Aberdeen are really exposed when they don't have their first 11 on the park, and I thought from what I saw, that the guy that sort of stood out like a sore thumb from, you know, shouldn't really be in an Aberdeen team is Jack McKenzie, and you know, not that he would necessarily, obviously Liam Scales couldn't play because it's losing against Celtic, but just taking, I have felt, and I think we probably saw that when Shinny was out of the team, you know, when Duke missed a few games. You remember McCrory's obviously out. You know, when those three were out recently, Aberdeen really did dip. And you know, again, you know, obviously it was Miowski and Scales that were missing, probably from the strongest team this time. I thought McKenzie just looked. I mean, to be fair to him, I don't think that's his position anyway, as you know, as a centre half. But he really struggled. And it will be interesting for Aberdeen as how do they approach. Having, you know, presumably having these sort of 8 extra games at least in Europe, how do you reposition the squad to not necessarily away from having a strong first 11, but you need to have that, and then probably another 5 or 6 that aren't a big drop off. Now you always have, you know, you can't, you know, no Scottish team really can have sort of 2 11s, you know, of the completely same quality, but. Yeah, I think they need to go. More depth will need to be added, and I think Hearts are probably a cautionary tale in doing that. Just in terms of how I felt that Hearts almost had the assumption that nobody would be able to play 2 games a week, so they tried to have a big enough squad so that they could almost rotate an entire 11 at times. And I think I'm sure I said this in one of the European pods we did, when those games were going on. I think the more important thing is trying to have a good number of players who can go twice a week. Because you can't really afford to just cheat you, because that run of games ultimately is what did for Hearts in terms of finishing third, because that was Aberdeen under Jim Goodwin of all people were sort of comfortably in third, had Hearts negotiated that period when they were in Europe a bit better than they might have finished third. So yeah, it'll be just interesting to see how Aberdeen managed that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. I think that, and there is a lot of bodies, not necessarily needed, but there's going to be a lot of, there's four who were on loan who may or may not come back next season, but that'll need to be negotiated. Ross McCrory is presumably off to Bristol City. So
For good money.
There may well be other bits and pieces coming in from add-ons, depending on what happens especially with Lewis Ferguson.
There's money from McKenna, isn't there, for staying up?
There's other Nottingham Forest money coming in. They'll spend money. I reckon there will be they'll break their transfer record this summer. I think
finally Paul Bernard's title is going to go.
His title will go. It's nearly 20 years, nearly 30 years. God, no, sad day. I'm sure my age. I think that there's been quite a lot of focus, which is positive, on the transfers that worked, and not so much on the Callum Roberts and Shaden Morris, and players like that, Jaden Robertson, who maybe didn't quite work out or didn't work out. And the squad is definitely going to need to be better, because as it stands, they need a left wing back, a right wing back, two new centre backs, a Graham Shinney or replacement, and probably another, and at least another striker. And that's before that's just to stay at the level. So,
yeah, yeah. So yeah, lots to do.
Big summer needed. We'll do the ones that don't matter and then end on a high. Okay. We can fly through that. St Johnstone 2, Livingston 0. It was a bit of end of an era feel.
Yeah.
Probably,
I don't think I've ever seen that, like a chairman getting some kind of guard of honour and banners and all that. That was a bit odd, but fair play, I suppose. The Brown family have been assessed, but as far as I'm aware, there hasn't been a takeover yet. So
no,
so it seems a bit like they've sort of made a big deal of this, but they're still owning the club, and ultimately they will still be pulling the strings. So that was a bit weird. And obviously Murray Davidson as well. Chris Kane looks like it's probably his last game. So he got allowed to take a penalty.
Which was nice of him.
Yeah.
Nice of him, wasn't it?
Yeah. Livingston are very good at giving away penalties. So it was nice from them as well. I think St Johnstone, slightly surprised that appointment worked as well as it did. Steve McLean coming in. But that it does strike me that was he was not the last guy. They had a bit of an upturn because I actually thought they were the team most likely to, if they were in the playoff, get beat, which doesn't look like the way they finished the season. You wouldn't say that now, but I felt a few weeks ago that they would possibly struggle if they fit into the playoff. But they've obviously got enough results and they pulled away from that. Livingston.
You never want to write off Livingston. You never want to say like they have got problems, because they always seem to pull something out somewhere. And at all, I'm not going to do that. But there are, they had four subs.
Yes,
they're losing a lot of really important players.
Budgets are rumored to be getting cut quite severely,
and David Martindale saying already that it's the lowest budget in the league, which surprised me, but I don't really know why it surprised me.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at who else is in the league, who else would have a really lower budget? I mean, maybe Ross County, but Uncle Roy, Kilmarnock, you would have thought would have had a bigger one. St Johnstone, that wasn't really Davidson's problem, was probably squandering the money they had rather than not having enough of it. So yeah, they might be, albeit they had quite a big squad, Livingston, for that considered.
They tend to go through a lot of players in a season because there's guys that are like, oh yeah, I forgot all about him. Who
plays he?
Oh, he's in Greece, or he's in some, you know, he's off somewhere.
They're Rovers. I know, and I think the there's always a debate, I suppose, for the smaller clubs. Like, do you try and have like Livingston, probably more than almost any other team in the league, probably do have two 11s of pretty much the same quality, and that is impressive in some way because they probably have two 11s that would finish eighth in the league, but. Could they not maybe combine that into one 11 and a few subs, they would have finished sixth. I think they maybe could have done, given Martindale sort of eye for a player and so on. But it does feel like, especially in midfield, they've got so many guys who you would sort of think of as at least players of starting quality for Livingston who don't actually start every week. It's an interesting one as to where they go from here, and they might have to be a bit of a wing and a prayer and just rely on maybe 14 or 15 sort of first team quality players next season and see where that gets them. But depending on which ones they hold on to, they might be all right. But they've already obviously losing Devlin and Fitzwater, who are probably two of the stronger players.
I mean, Martindale kind of touched on it afterwards in his interview that, like, to my mind, they'd kind of downed tools, but they had the fall off in form was so severe about 3 months ago. But his point was, we've just not really turned up since January. And that's interesting how that's from his point of view and how he kind of looks to build the squad. He's got a chance to refresh it all, but what was it that caused that? Because I mean, they were at least favourites for fourth. You know, at one point they had games in hand. They were playing well. Nobody else was playing well. They were an absolute shoo-in for a top six place, and something like three wins from 15 games or something four or five in the this calendar year. Pretty ropey, but can't read too much into it from this one-off game. I mean, I the other note I had is that vaguely Stephen McLean's St Johnstone look a little bit more open.
They have shots. I felt a lot of times when I watched St Johnstone, either the whole game or even just a sports scene, and some of like the sort of efforts on goal that sports scene sort of had to show just for way of balance. It was like that is 100%. The other team has had like three chances better than the chances for St Johnstone they've showed you here, but they feel like they better show that St Johnstone at least got into the opposition half at one point. They were. You're terrible to watch, obviously, under Davidson. And McLean's, it's probably slightly too early to tell what his approach will be, once he reshapes the squad slightly. But it does look like, I wouldn't go as far as saying they'll be sexy St Johnstone, but they might be slightly not as eye-bleedingly bad St Johnstone. So we'll look forward to that next season.
Well, that whets the appetite. Quite as eye-bleedingly bad. Two games left, one with significant impact at the end of the season. Kilmarnock pretty much thumped Ross County. There were nerves. Had Ross County beaten Kilmarnock, they would have leapfrogged them, and Kilmarnock would have been in the playoff against Partick Thistle this week. But no sign whatsoever of any nervousness from Killy, who actually, I mean, with the caveats of the bottom six and all of that, but, you know, while plenty around them were losing their heads, they seemed to find a bit of form. There seemed to be a few players who hadn't really done much this season or hadn't really turned up in any great with any great consistency, starting to put together a little bit of form and, you know, showing that they deserve to be a top flight club this season, next season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, indeed. I wonder, I think with Kilmarnock, maybe their approach to football generally, it sort of suits the situation in that, you know, it's obviously it's Derek McInnes, it's not exactly free-flowing or risk-taking football. It's been very basic, I think. I probably criticised him plenty of times this season for just trying to lump it in the box and hope one of the big men does something with it. But when I felt that probably a lot of teams in the bottom six in particular have had to, you know, have sort of resorted to that in these sort of last few games because they're too scared to play any other way. Well, Kilmarnock have been playing like that all season on purpose. So they're sort of better at it. And it just felt like, you know, they were getting the ball in the box plenty early on. You know, and then obviously, you know, once they take the lead, I mean, you know, it shouldn't have really probably taken quite as long as that for them to take the lead, but they considered that they, you know, they were the team that a draw would have been plenty for, you know, they sort of did, and you know, that I think that can be awkward for a team that, you know, it's almost like you don't know how to play because you're at home and you should, you know, you would normally sort of go for it a bit, but you know that actually a draw will be enough. But there's no sign of that. You know, they went for it, and, you know, and tried to win the game, and obviously, you know, succeeded in that. So it's a impressive sort of run of games from them at the end of the season. Some impressive performance. I mean, Armstrong has been good all season for them, and really, I think if anyone sort of kept them up, he has. Walker and Goals has made a lot of good saves towards the end of the season, and sort of Kyle Vassell, who I can't really remember a player who has signed a permanent deal and then, you know, and quite a long one, you know, in the context, you know, a 2-year deal and got better like he has. Like, you know, I normally feel like players, what I would have expected to happen is maybe Vassell to play exactly like this, then get a 2-year deal in the summer, and then be absolutely humpty for the rest of his time at Kilmarnock. And, you know, and that might well happen next season and the following season, who knows? But he's been really, really good. I mean, he's really kicked on since he signed that deal. I don't think he'd signed a league goal before then, and now he's scored, is it 4 maybe in the last few weeks?
And this one, the most bizarre goals. Like, he has a shot and it spoons up, and he has like a sort of half volley, and it's blocked and it spoons up, and then he gets up and under with a header and loops it over the goalkeeper. It's like,
you'd be so annoyed if you were one, Malky Mackay, but two, I think it's Baldwin puts in an absolutely brilliant block for the second shot. You know, he comes from sort of nowhere, dives in front of it, gets a leg, really good block, but obviously it goes up in the air, and everyone else is just going, oh, that was a good block, whereas Vassell runs onto it and headers it.
It's a brilliant header as well.
Oh, yeah, like, it was brilliant. Proper,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
very, very odd.
Three very different bits of technique.
Yes. That, I think Craig Addison described it as a perfect hat-trick of perseverance, because it was like I think it was a right-foot shot, a left-foot shot, and a header, and yeah, eventually got there. So you know, he's been really good, and Doidge is probably started to play a wee bit better as well. Maybe he's
I think they've used him. Maybe it's just a fitness thing, but they do seem to have used him a bit better. Like, I think his injury obviously took its toll on the way that he liked to play, and, you know, this is based on absolute nothing. So I'm completely fit, but it does look like he's kind of learned to use his physique a bit more. He's a bit smarter with, like, he's a bit better with his back to goal, which wasn't really his forte. And looked like he was starting to get the last couple of games. Anyway, he looked like he was a bit more of an all round offensive weapon and a bit of a nuisance, which is always quite nice to have.
Yes, well, I've got two. So yeah, I've sort of queried whether that was a good idea to just have to, you know, the big man, front partnership, but it has worked in. I think they've probably both got fitter. Vassell as well hadn't played. Certainly, I think he had been playing fairly regularly in whatever tier of American football he was in. But you know, in terms of the level, it would probably be a fair bit off the Premiership. So he has just got better probably as he's got fitter as well. And he is quite mobile. So you know, that has started to actually work. And I think, well, Deutsch won't be signed up for next season. But hardly anybody is, I think, apart from Armstrong, Vassell and Walker, maybe? Or McKenzie, I think, is also signed up, but they pretty much got a blank slate. And that has, you know, obviously, I can't imagine too many Kilmarnock fans are, you know, desperate to see that many of this team stay on, because it has been pretty ropey to watch for a lot of the season. But they'll have to, some of those guys will have to stay, I think, ultimately, because I don't think they're going to, you know, change out sort of 15 players, whatever they might have to, but if they were to let everybody go, so yeah, some of them will stay, but there probably is something to build on, albeit they have lost a vital cog in the machine in Tony Docherty today.
To a photoshopped Aberdeen top for his Dundee.
Was it the 7-0 game that was from, incidentally, like the Considine hat trick game?
Oh, I don't know, but that would be really good if it was.
that's just the Aberdeen game at Dens Park that comes to mind for me. So I was wondering if it was that one. But the other one would have been, I suppose, the concomitant banner one. That was also Dens Park, I think. And it wasn't the same game, was it? No, don't think it was.
No.
So that'd be the one. And Tony Docherty is in some circles blamed / gets a lot of praise for preventing Derek McInnes from taking the Rangers job. There was a rumour that he wasn't as in favour of and convinced McInnes partly to not take it. So that was an interesting career move at the time, which I would argue did not pan out. Well, McInnes might well be Kilmarnock manager right now had he taken the Rangers job. He might have just tanked his reputation quicker. But I don't think that's a good appointment for Dundee, personally. I think that's I think it's quite a mad appointment, actually. I've seen it described as sensible, but I don't really understand why appointing a guy who's not been a manager before to be your manager.
I think it's sensible in the sense that we're talking about Dundee. And Dundee could well have appointed anyone. Like it could have been absolutely, like it could have been a 28-year-old with a sports
it could have been
science
Charlie
degree.
Adam.
It could have been Charlie Adam. It could have been Gavin Strachan.
Yes.
It should have been
one of those. If you're gonna appoint a guy who's not been a manager before, either has to be the Nepo baby son of the the whatever Gordon Strachan's actual job title is at Dundee, it seems quite confusing. Him or, you know, the sort of layabout lazy centre mid will probably come out of retirement halfway through the season because you'll get frustrated at how terrible this football team is. You know, it should have been one of them. So I feel Tony Docherty is just, you know, is not enough to personally, as you know, you'll just probably get sacked for Charlie Adam in about November, December time, I suspect. But until then, we'll just have to, I don't know, he's never struck me as a sort of career assistant manager. It's quite late to take the leap, I would say. And I don't know. I've never seen enough. I've not followed him that closely, but I've never thought of him as like a manager in waiting personally, but he obviously had an ambition to do it and fair play.
Yeah, I think, I'm intrigued, but yeah. I think all things considered and considering some of the fireworks that were promised, it's a bit of a letdown.
Yeah,
well done, Dundee, on doing something that I think could have been so fun, and you've gone for something that's actually kind of that's probably had some thought, or you've had to go a little bit further than just, you know, you've had to dig through some CVs to get there. Anyway, speaking of calamity in Dundee, goodbye Dundee United. You've been circling the drain for the whole season, let's face it. They were pretty much, yes. they were kind of, I mean, they were done in all, but it just hadn't really been rubber stamped. There was some mischief that crossed my mind that if they scored a couple early on, then it might make the Killie Ross County game weird. But Dundee United, it almost showed their problem for the whole season in this one game, where when they get going up front, they have loads of really good options. Yeah. They've got really dynamic forward players. They've got an actual number nine. They've got pace on the wings. They've got creativity, but they have no defenders. There is nobody in that team that knows how to defend. And they, like, of course, Kevin Van Veen scored, I think, what's that? He's got 17 in his last 16 games, which is two more than Dundee United have got.
He's been ridiculous.
He's just been ridiculous, and everything he hits seems to be going in at the moment. But the way that Dundee United could, like, Motherwell with absolutely nothing to play for and no reason to really turn it on, that's all the more damning, because Dundee United came on, like, Dundee United, right, okay, well, we'll at least restore some pride, got back in the game, and then the same problem all over again. Like, just they get sucked into the ball so easily. It's like, this is you're almost like, there's got to be something more I can talk about. There's got to be a way of talking about the tactics of this in a way that makes me seem intelligent. But basically what happened regularly was Motherwell would attack down the left-hand side and then switch the play to the right-hand side, and no one would fall. No, there was nobody there.
Dundee would be like, because, it's like, what?
They're like, what are they doing? But the ball was over there a minute ago. There's like three men going to the ball across, and somebody spare coming. Yeah. It's just...
Yeah, I know. It's like they're the England team that played in the first international against Scotland and didn't realise you were allowed to pass the ball, and like had to, like, yes, check the rules to see, is that allowed? Yeah, all right, it's all right, fair enough.
What was that thing they were doing? It's very ungentlemanly to put a foot in.
Yes, very, very. Watching this game, I was like, the thing that I kept on thinking of is there's so many players in this Dundee United team that should absolutely rip up the championship. Now, they won't have all of them. You know, that's a guy like Jamie McGrath. Obviously, he's not going to stay now. You go somewhere else. I don't know. I can imagine most would probably like to move on. But like someone like Dylan Levitt, I mean, he would be one of the best midfielders to have played in the championship in years if he goes down. And Jan actually plays. Now, they would need to get some, I mean, as they needed to this season, get some guys to do his running and, give him the ball, which they've absolutely failed to do. But some of the passes he was playing in the first half, absolutely brilliant. Like, he's such a good technical footballer when you give him the ball. But how Dundee United have managed to squander the amount of genuine talent that they have, even in a Premiership level, is ridiculous. And is... I mean, defensively, I think obviously the guy that's taken most of the flak quite rightly all season has been Berghetti, and he has come out and of the team, and they've still got beat in the last two games because the defense itself is terrible, possibly because that defense has completely lost all faith in itself because of who they've had behind them all season. And I do think, had Berghetti not been the goalkeeper, then and you put in the average Premiership goalkeeper, I think they probably don't go down. But it does show it wasn't just him. They have had serious issues. The centre half, they're a disaster. So, I mean, that was without Mulgrew and Edwards, who have maybe become the two sort of other guys that have had the most blame recently. I think Ayina is, to me, he's like the textbook guy of, you don't want him on loan. You don't want that kind of player on loan, because he could quite possibly have a very good career because he does have something about him, but he is at your club to make mistakes. And Dundee United could not take on a player in January that was there to make mistakes for them. They needed the opposite. He's just not been good enough you know, in this run, and as you'd sort of expect for a, you know, an experienced centre half. They tried Ross Graham, who doesn't, you know, looks a shadow of the player he looked sort of when he came into the team last season. So yeah, I don't know where they go from now, from here.
I think that's exactly that. I mean, I think Aziz Bajic would, like, there are five players in that starting 11 who would comfortably play, be part of a squad in the top six, like, easily. Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah. Very comfortable, maybe even six of them. Hmm. You know, maybe we'll do this sometime, a Patreon, who would, like, what would the worst attributes from a better club to get a player on loan? It's like a guy who's really, really good technically, tries to do everything at a million miles an hour. You know, he's getting paid more than anyone else in the league because he's come on loan from England. Knows that it's not really going to affect his career that much. Far too much confidence in his own ability to be playing at the back. And it's like, I mean, all of the above. And I think that the big difference between the two teams, I think, for me, Motherwell, the reason that they won this game was they didn't have any urgency because they didn't have to. It was like, if we just take our time and everybody does their jobs and, oh, look, there's a runner. Oh, look, there's nobody being marked over there. Oh, look, the ball's just going to break and these things are going to fall into place if we just keep doing what we're doing. Dundee United, it was like, we can juggle chainsaws. We should juggle them quicker. What we should do is do this all much, much quicker. If we can just do it as quickly as we possibly can and go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And it's all an attempt at doing it all a million miles an hour, and they're just not there. I think that it's almost a perfect storm of, they could have done any one of about 10 things differently and they would have stayed up. Had they got an actual centre-back, had they got an actual goalkeeper, had they signed an actual holding midfielder of any kind of sort, like, had they done something to balance how lightweight that... You know, the five midfield players probably weigh about... combined weight's probably about 50 stone. Like, they're... Yeah.
Had they not appointed, like... Sideshow Bob walking into Rakes as their third manager of the season. Like, it just, the vibes were off. You could tell Goodwin was not going to go from getting beat by Darvel and getting beat 6-0 by Hibs and then heroically keep Dundee United up. I'm sorry, that wasn't happening. And, that's an interesting decision, that to give him a 2-year deal. I mean, I can sort of see where they're coming from with it, but...
For him, though, at the time it was given... And bear in mind, I have, after the season we've had, I've got no real love for Jim Goodwin. No. You know, it'll take a wee while to get over that trauma. I couldn't understand why he wanted it.
Yeah.
Like, he would have got, there would have been another one. There would have been, there. Well, there has been.
There's, there was, yeah. Yeah. Been he would have had to go offer that job. Yeah.
Or like Dundee coming back up or something like that. Like, just take a couple of months to take a breather. That over there is an absolute bin fire. Like, if you can do anything, like, there's not an awful lot you can do with that. And I don't think either of them have been good for each other. I think, as he's rightly pointed out, if they don't really get themselves together next season, I don't think it'll matter that they've got, if they kept the attacking players that they do have at their disposal, and they won't. Because defensively, they will still ship goals in the championship.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not even that defence is not even a championship, you know, top half defence at the moment. I mean, that's how bad it is. They absolutely need a whole new defence, which Jim Goodwin famously is able to sort out very quickly. So I look forward to seeing him do that in the summer.
Indeed. Anything else on this one? Anything else on season 2022-23?
Good riddance. It's not been a fantastic... I don't think it's been a... I mean, there's been their moments. I would say probably Aberdeen's maybe month-long
weirdness.
That was the weirdness. I wouldn't include any of them being good at the start, good at the end. I'm not really interested in that. I'm just interested in the month where it all went to shit. That was good. I enjoyed that. There wasn't much to enjoy, really, as a Rangers fan. Dundee United have given us some laughs as well. So thank you, Dundee United. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's probably not been as you know that great a season. But yeah, it'd obviously all be craned off if Cali Thistle could win the Scottish Cup next week. That would be the funniest result in Scottish football history, I think. But sadly, what happened? But
if it did, it would be ideally.
What I would really like to see is Aberdeen spend their European money this week, and then to not. Because actually, just I've seen that apparently the Aberdeen are close on in signing Luton Clarkson.
Yeah,
I received an email. There was an email while we were podding. I received an email from a patriot. So Alan Dixon is saying that it's close. So,
which is phenomenal news.
Yes, would be really. So yeah, I think he'd be an excellent signing. But hopefully, you know, the site, you know, that's your new Paul Bernard, and then the money just gets pulled out from underneath you, and
speaks the voice of a bitter Rangers fan.
Yes, absolutely. But Billy Dodds, I wish you good luck, and we'll see how you're going.
Well, that was season 2022-2023. Here's to more Dundee United calamity next season. There'll be various. We're off to record a Patreon. There will be various Patreon bits going live across the whole of the summer, and a review of the season, which is being recorded also this later on this week. But for obvious reasons, there's not going to be the same weekly updates until next year. Thanks for sticking with us through this season, and look forward to speaking to you again next season.
Podcast Network.